So take your notes out with me. Check this out. Atlanta newspaper, in the personal ads section, this got some attention. A single black female, this is what she writes, a single black female seeks male companionship. Ethnicity, not important. I'm young and good-looking. I'm a girl who loves to play. I love long walks, riding in your pickup truck, hunting, camping, fishing, cozy winter nights spent lying by the fire. I'll be at the front door when you come home from work wearing nothing but what nature gave me. Call 859-875-6420. Ask for Daisy. Don't write that down, guys. 1,500 men responded to this ad, only to reach the number of the Humane Society, where a black Labrador named Daisy lives. So, I mean, it's a big deal in our culture. We're in a series called Mr. and Mrs. Better Half. I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. And if this is a weekend that you're visiting Eastlake Church, wow, you picked a great weekend to be here. Because on occasion, and especially in a series about marriage, we'll talk about something like sex, very practical, and at the same time, something that isn't often talked about in church. So I'm thankful, glad you're here. Good if you're watching online, and I hope you'll swing by and catch us sometime. Live service at your church, too. Let me make a few disclaimers before we begin. Connie mentioned it's a PG-13 service, so maybe even a little towards R. So you may hear some things today that you're not used to hearing in church. It's stuff you say all the time, but you may not be used to hearing it in church. I'm not saying that for shock value. I'm just wanting to have straightforward communication, wanting to make certain, kind of put it out there and be open to create a dialogue. And the second thing is that we all have our skeletons in our closet. So this isn't to dredge up some kind of guilt, but, you know, an issue might surface. So can we just agree that if something comes up for you, it's not because we're trying to cause some religious guilt. It's probably because you're ready to be healed, and God wants to heal you. So if something comes up, an issue comes up, then that's it. And then the last thing is, I know that I'm going to say things today, and some of you are going to go, yeah, right. Get with the times. Have you been living under a rock for 50 years? And I understand that. I'll say things today, you're like, come on. I mean, you're like, you know, not now, not in the times that we live in now. And I'm going to bring a biblical perspective to this whole idea of what it is to have sex and be sexual and be in marriage and have sex. And the Bible is timeless. It offers a perspective about sex that will help you fail-proof your marriage. Because we all have a sex drive, and it's silly to pretend that we don't have a sex drive because we do have a sex drive. Now, we're not animals. It's like you turn on the Discovery Channel, and all of a sudden two water buffaloes are going at it, and you're like, oh, it's just like, you know. They're animals. I mean, it's not emotional for them. It's not spiritual for them. It's not relational for animals, but it is for us. It's emotional for us, and sex is relational for us because we're people, and we connect. And one of the things about sex is it's not only physical. I know in our culture it's sort of put out as a recreational exercise, but the truth is it's a relational thing. It's emotional. And when you don't get the whole context of sex in marriage, when you don't get that, when it's just something very, very physical, not only do you miss out on a lot, you're not really participating in having sex in the way God designed it. And I know that a lot of people think, well, God is way too proper and religious to ever talk about sex. But the truth is, he created sex very specifically and for a reason. And he created it to be relational, and it's in the context of marriage. And I know right away you're thinking, oh boy, here he goes. You know, preacher boy. I mean, what else would he say at church? You've got to be married to have sex. And yeah, I've heard it. And I know. And probably some of you at this point, you're already starting to shut down. It's like, well, what else would he say? You know, he's pastor boy. Of course he's going to tell us not to have sex. But the truth is that it was designed to be relational in a certain context. And when we take it out of that context, my son bought a fire pit this last year, and you bring it in the backyard, and you put stuff in it, and you get to sit around this little fire pit, and it's awesome. But it has all these warnings on it. Don't use this in your living room, you know, and don't let little kids around it, and things like that. And, you know, the fire's really good inside the pit, but if it escapes out of the pit, something that's very, very nice, and you're warmed by it, it's like, oh, it's so nice to be by the fire. We'll roast a marshmallow. Really nice in the pit. When the fire gets out of the pit, can be very dangerous. And it's the same way with like when sex get in a different relational context. So let's look at it today. Write in your notes the big idea. God created sex for commitment, intimacy, and enjoyment. Because it is physical, but it is relational. So we'll just kind of put it out there and talk about it. Because when it gets out of the context of a marriage relationship, you know, I could create a line from here to Walmart with people that I've talked to through the years that said, I thought it was going to be so different when I got married, and I'm disappointed with sex. With people that thought it was going to be so great, and they've been disappointed by the way sex has showed up in their lives before and after marriage. And lots of friends, lots of people that I've talked to, and it's just it's kind of under the radar in our culture. I mean, maybe you came from a family and nobody ever talked about sex at all. You know, and so it was like a big mystery to you. That's kind of how it was in my family. And so, you know, you kind of have to fake it and pretend like you know things about sex because you don't want to be embarrassed to be like the only person that doesn't know at school. And then there, you know, maybe you come from a family where it's just like all the, you saw all the bad stuff, the abuse and the affairs and broken families. And for you, it's like sex is really bad. Or when I was in second grade, I lived, the neighbor next to us, well, there was a fourth grade girl, and she kept trying to talk me into putting my hands down her pants. And I was in second grade, and I didn't, I mean, I was curious, and it was exciting, and like there was this part of me that really wanted to do it, but there was another part of me that's like, oh, I'm my own pants, you know? It's like, and she says, come on, and so one day, you know, we're in the backyard, and she grabs my hand, she starts to put it down her pants, and I'm like, you know, and there's like that moment where you're like, wow, you know, this is, why am I feeling, second grade, why am I feeling like this? I think I like this feeling. But then there's all these other emotions, like, I don't know if I should be doing this. At the last minute, I freaked out. I pulled my hand away. I ran back in my house, went into my bedroom. I hid in my closet. I just stayed in there. I'm like, whew, that's a lot of feelings for a little man. You know, and like half hour later, I finally, you know, get the courage out. I walk out my front door. I go into the front yard. And her mom comes storming out of the front door of their house and says, where, at the top of her lungs, where is he? Where's he at? And I'm standing there. I'm tired. I just about peed my pants. I was like, how did she know? You know, I said, where's he at? He's not supposed to be out here without his leash on. And she was talking about the dog. But, you know, for the rest of my life, It was sort of like that when it came to sex. It's like, well, sure, I want to. I mean, this is awesome. This feels great. It's like, I want to do it. But then there was this other part of me that was like, how come it doesn't seem right? And maybe you come in today and you have regrets and you have guilt and you look back and you try not to remember, but there's guilt there because that comes along for the ride too. Listen to what the Bible says about it, to just put it in this context. Look at this. There's more to sex than mere skin on skin. Remember, our culture says it's just physical, it's recreational, just have some fun. Here's what the scripture says, Bible. There's more to sex than just mere skin on skin. Sex is as much spiritual mystery as a physical fact. As written in scripture, the two will become one. Since we want to become spiritually one with the Master, we must not pursue the kind of sex that avoids commitment and intimacy, leaving us more lonely than ever. The kind of sex that can never become one. And when you do take sex out of the context that God created it for, you can have like a great physical experience and then end up wondering, why do I feel more lonely than ever? Which is confusing. I mean, just think in your mind, have you ever thought, how could something so fun leave me feeling so empty? I mean, how does that work? And it's describing it. It's saying because it was designed to be in the context of a relationship where there's commitment and intimacy and enjoyment. Lots of fun. And that's why. But in a marriage relationship, here's another part of the Bible. Let your wife be a fountain of blessing to you. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. She's a loving deer and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you always. May you always be captivated by her love, husband and wives. So here's the great news for men. Your wife's breasts can always be what satisfies you, even though there's a lot of other breasts around. I work at a place every day, and there's this one girl there. I really like her, but she hasn't learned that like appropriateness, like when you bend down if you're a girl, you know. And she wears low tops, and she's busty, and she's just always, you know, at her desk, and she's bending down like this, and it's awkward for you because you're like trying not to look, and there's like a magnet, and it's like eyes up, you know. It's like, because there's lots of breasts around. There's no shortage of breasts. I mean, any man will tell you. Everywhere I go, all I ever see is boobs. You know, it's like they're everywhere. But when you're married and you have a wife and you learn what it is to be sexual with your wife, do you know like all the other boobs are there, and of course they are, but it's her breasts. And how about this? Think about from a woman's perspective, what if you knew in your heart that your husband, you were the only one that captivated him? I mean, would that be awesome? Like, walk on in, Angela Jolie, because you are second place to me. Because I captivate his love. That's what marriage is all about, and that's what sex is all about in marriage. Now let's look at some things. Number one, guard your heart to protect your relationship. So like, okay, so how does sex work in marriage, and why does it fail-proof our marriage? What is it designed for? How does it work? Here's the very first one. Guard your heart to protect your relationship. So with this girl at work who I like, she seems like a sweet girl, I just always have to watch where I'm at around her, and I just kind of have to watch where I'm positioned, and I don't spend time with her. I haven't got to know her. She's not my friend, because I'm guarding. And in marriage, let's just read something. There's this story in the Bible about this family, lived long, long time ago. It's in the Old Testament. And there's this boy in this story. His name is Joseph. Big, big family. So you think he's from Utah. He's got like 11 brothers and a bunch of sisters and like a huge family, you know, so they obviously like sex. And, you know, all these people. And he's the littlest one. He's the littlest one. You know what always happens sometimes? The littlest one, the baby, they're the favored one. So he's the favored one. And by the way, if you really want to screw up your family, favor one of your children, because you will jack up your family. And that's what happens in this family. It like totally jacks up the family because all the other brothers are like, what's up with you, man, you little runt? Because the dad really favors this kid. And so there's all this tension in the family. And they have the family business is livestock. They're shepherds, right? And so they have this business kind of a long ways away from the house where they have all this property where the sheep are. And so the brothers, they're in the family business. They're out there. They're shepherds tending the sheep. And they don't even talk to the dad. There's no communication because they're really angry. And by the way, if you favor one of your children, you will break down communication between your children. See, that's what's so weird is you have a favorite child. We like to go to the movies and talk, and they're just like me. And you don't think anything's wrong because you're like really good with that kid. But amongst the kids, it will be a total breakdown. And then when that occurs, eventually those kids will have a breakdown with you. And that's what's going on in this family. They're not even talking to their dad. He's trying to run this business. And he doesn't even know how to deal with them. And so he sends Joseph, the youngest one, out as kind of like a spy. Go be daddy's spy and go see how they're doing, how they're working. Where he shows up and they're like, and they attack him. They beat him up. And literally, it can get so bad in families that you can so violent. I mean, it's like it's on the edge of murder. I mean, they're about ready to kill this kid. Because, you know, you can get so mad, you're pounding on somebody, you lose track of it all. And one brother said, whoa, wait, you're going to kill him, man. Have you ever been in a fight somewhere and you just see some dude hitting somebody so many times and all of a sudden it flashes your mind, whoa, dude, come on, man. That's what's happening. And so they pull him off, and they're like, well, what should we do with him? And just then, this is a true story. These gypsies go by, you know, tambourines, the gypsies go by. And they're like, hey, here's what we'll do. So they sell him to the gypsies. And the gypsies are like, good, dang, duct tape his feet, take him, we'll sell him somewhere, you know. And they do. They're like going from Israel. This all happens in Israel. They're going down to Egypt. So they sell him to this Egyptian called Potiphar. Now, don't get lost here, because this is a good story. So, like, Potiphar gets him and makes him a slave. So now he goes into Potiphar's house, and he's a slave. His whole life is different. He has to learn a completely different language. Everything's different in his life altogether. And he's a slave. And you know, when I got married, it's like my whole life got different. I mean, everything got different. And it was like, it was almost like I had to learn the marriage language. I didn't have my freedom anymore. It's like, I got to tell people where I am when I'm coming home and why I didn't show up where I was supposed to be. And it's like, I kind of felt like my freedom was gone. You know, you're like, hey, got married for sex, not to be a slave. Got the wrong thing going on here. Listen to this part of the Bible. One day he went into the house to attend his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left the cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. So what happens is he's at this house now. His life is totally upside down, and everything's different. And then here's what happens. A girl thinks he's cute. It's like when your marriage is like really, really rough. Because, you know, you never intend to fight like more than you have sex. You go into marriage and think, I have sex about 90% of the time. We'll fight about 10. You realize, well, how did that get flipped? And so he's like, he's unhappy. And so it's like when you're in your marriage and you're unhappy and you go to work and somebody thinks you have a nice butt. And you know, you're like, I remember what that feels like. He hasn't said anything about my butt in ages except for take the pants off it. I remember what it felt like when someone looked at my butt twice. And Joseph, he's like, I remember these feelings. I remember what it was like to feel special and the favored one and have all these emotions where, like, they picked me. And she comes and she's like, hey, I want you. And that can happen at work. It can happen anywhere. It can happen to men and women. All of a sudden, you know, you're like struggling through your marriage, and all of a sudden someone pays attention to, and they just flirt a little bit, just enough. And now the emotions come. You're like, wow, I haven't felt like this since before I got married. This is awesome. And that's where Joseph is. And you know, in the Bible, let me like read you his little trick that he does here. It'll be on the screen, but I'm just going to read it to you. It's not in your notes. And though she spoke to him every single day, Joseph, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. So that's his big trick. And you might be thinking, when it comes to guard your heart, you might be thinking, come on, Robin, you're better than that. I mean, you went to school, for heaven's sake. Give us some slick way to get out of this. Tell us some really neat little gimmick. I mean, is that all you got for me? Is like run out of the house, run away? Yeah. That's all I got. One of the things I've noticed at work with this one girl is that I've got to put distance between her and I. And you know, I don't even know her name. But I know if I get too close, I'm going to want to look down that shirt. And you know the problem, you know the first thing a man, I hate to say this, but I'm going to just throw all the men under the bus. The first thing a man wants to do when he looks down a girl's shirt, you know, after he looks down the shirt, you know the first thing he wants to do? Look down the shirt again. And then you're trapped. And that sucks because it's not like you can do anything unless you start to try to make something happen. Just push and see, maybe, huh? And so I've got to put distance. You might be thinking, come on, can't you give me something better than that? Are you telling me that I've literally got to put distance? I got to run anytime I get tempted? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I got nothing else for you. I thought about it all week. This is the only story I could come up with. All I know how to do is run. I got a story for you, though. My buddy, he didn't run. So he had a hard marriage, and the hardest thing about his marriage is the sex part of it. Like, they never had sex, and they just couldn't get that going. He's always disappointed with the sex in his marriage. And then, you know, people started flirting with him, and he didn't run. I think he thought, well, I can handle this, because you know what feelings are like? It's like when I used to be a drug addict. I'm like, well, I'm not going to totally get blasted tonight. I'm just going to take enough to feel good. And then as soon as I took a little bit of drugs that I felt good, I wanted more. And so I think he just thought, I just kind of want to feel like Joseph. He's like, it's just so great to feel like I used to feel before I got married. And so he'd get too close. Him and I launched a church together. Just started just like this. Very, very small. And got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. He was a great preacher, by the way. And in those days, I was the music person, so if you can imagine that, I was a guy that stand up and sang and everything, and in spite of my crappy voice, the church grew. And, I mean, grew and grew and grew, and I mean hundreds, hundreds, and then thousands. this was like a big deal in our community, you know. It's like we're all together and we're going, and it's just like crazy. Me and him, me and him. You know, it's like, poof, one more. People are getting saved and baptized, and it's like going crazy. But I didn't, the entire time, I didn't realize he's not running. And eventually it took him down. And all kinds of women. It all got found out. And, of course, his wife was humiliated, and his kids were embarrassed, and lost all the church, and my office was filled 24/7 with people that were completely disillusioned, because he acted one way up here, and then, like, and I want to let you know something. I didn't look down on him then, and I do not look down on him now, because I know the only difference between him and I mean the only difference, is that I ran, and he didn't. And that's the only thing, man. That's the only difference. See, when I got married, I didn't think I'd ever be tempted sexually again. I was like, I'm never going to be sexually tempted again, because I'm going to be having sex 5 or 6 times a day. I mean, what's there to be tempted about? This is going to be awesome. I'm going to, like, you know, be completely sexed out. My wife's going to say, no, boy, we've got to go one more time. Go, all right, you know. Somebody's got to do it. That did not come out right. That did not come out right. And then I got married, and I realized, what? I still notice things, and I'm still tempted, and what? Yeah. And so what I learned, and all I've got for you on this first point, if you want to guard your heart, learn to run. Do you know, if you're a husband, do you know the best message you can send your wife when other girls are around and they look your way or anything like that? Let your wife see you run. One of my heroes retired from the NBA years ago. His name was David Robinson. He was 7 feet tall, black guy. And he tells some story that I won't even tell in church. But apparently, like, if you're a 7 foot tall black man at different cities around the world, there's these women that are just like, I want to be with a 7 foot tall black man. And so everywhere you go, all these women would wait for the NBA guys, and they would wait for him. And so eventually he became a Christian. And he caught it. He was like, whoa, you know, I want to be a Christ follower. This is tearing me up, my heart, you know. And so he became a Christian. But he didn't know how to run. And he married his sweetheart, who he had this history with and all this crap. But eventually marries her, and he's solid, and they're going forward, right? But these girls would be there after all of the games, and they'd just be like they in front of his wife sometimes, they would give their number to him. And his wife was just like, hello. But he didn't know how to run. He didn't want to embarrass anybody. And one time he said he decided something. Gosh, if you're a dude, if you're in a relationship, if you're single, put this down. Because this will completely set the stage for how your wife can trust you or your girlfriend. This is what he did one time. He decided in his heart, if someone's going to be embarrassed, it's not going to be my wife. And the next time it happened, he chucked her. And he ran. And it built so much in their relationship. Now I want to ask you a question here, and I'm going to get a little pushy with you. Are you hanging around someone or something that you shouldn't? And you better start running, or you're going down. And I want to ask you to just look into the future. What will going down cost? I'm not at that church no more. Number two. Prepare the context to cause mutual satisfaction. So here's the deal. Even though you guard your heart, and even though you, like, really do good and you run away and all that kind of stuff, good sex doesn't happen automatically. Now you heard me say a couple weeks ago that, like, in context, men are more like microwaves. And when it comes to sex, they're like microwaves. So they heat up really, really quick, and the bell goes off, and they're done. You know, it's just how men are. I mean, men don't need context. You know, we're ready now. I mean, when I got married and someone said context, I'm like, context? What are you talking about, candles or something? I mean, what do you mean? You know, because men don't need context. They're like microwaves, and that's how they're wired. And so, do you know one of the best things that a woman can do to create context for a man is, you know, just don't worry too much about, like, now. That's our context. But women aren't that way. Women, I don't mean this in the wrong way, but Dutch oven, crock pot, picture it however you want. They take time. They warm up emotionally. You just don't press 1 minute and bing, and then they're done. They warm up. Here's the deal with men. Men have sex and then they feel better emotionally. Whew. Touchdown. Women need to feel good emotionally. And then they want to have sex. Do you see a problem? I mean, you got a crock pot over here, man, that takes like a half hour. And guys are like, a half hour? What are you talking about? What am I supposed to do? And there's a problem. And so first we'll start with the guys, because when it comes to guys and you're like with your wife, I mean, there's going to be an issue if you try to always make her act like a microwave, because she's not going to be ready. The bell's never going off, except for the side of your head when she hits it. That'd be your bell. Listen here, I want to show you something. This is how this one man reaches his wife emotionally. And this is in the Bible. Listen to this. Put up on the screen. How beautiful you are, my darling. How beautiful. Boy, every woman needs to have a sense of beauty. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from the hill of Gilead. There ain't nothing more sexy than a flock of goats. Did you hear what it said? How beautiful you are, my darling. How beautiful. And I'm going to read this in a second, but I just want to show you something real quick, because there's a standard of beauty in our culture that women have to measure up to. And so check this out. I want you to see this video right here. Check this out. This is the standard of beauty that women have to hit. Check this video out right here. That's the standard of beauty? I mean, does a woman really get to walk into the bathroom and come out looking like that? That's not even a fair standard, man. But listen to how this husband deals with it. We'll read it again. Put it up on the screen. How beautiful you are, my darling. Do you know what? He's telling her, you're my standard of beauty. You're my standard of beauty. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. The eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from the hill of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, coming up from the washing. Each one its twin. Not one of them is alone. I mean, he's finding a way. He's just like, baby, I'm just glad you got all your teeth in your head. You're beautiful to me. You don't look like a hockey player. Your lips are like scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. Your neck is like the Tower of David. Apparently she had like a really super long neck. And he's like trying to make something good out of it. And I do want to say this. This is like, do not, like a young husband, if there's something about your wife's body that's like sort of different or something, do not turn it into a joke. I just want you to know, like, let my life help you. Do not do that, because that is stupid. You're going to get the idiot award, which I got. He says, it's okay, baby. You got a long neck, but I like a long neck. It looks strong. Put a lot of necklaces on that neck. All of them shields of warriors. Your breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. I'm not even going there. But I do want to note, do you notice he doesn't get down to anything sexual until he said a lot of other stuff? Here's a really good point for men. Speak to your wife's heart before you reach for her boobs. I'm just saying. Because that's what he's doing. He's like, here's all the things about you that's beautiful because you're my standard of beauty. Then he gets around to the boobs. You know what? Here's what guys got to learn. There's plenty of time to get to the boobs. You ain't even seeing them anyways unless you do something up front. So start with showing you're my standard of beauty. If you have a hard time with the word boobs, then go back to fifth grade and they say it there all the time. So here we go. You are a garden fountain, a well of flowing water streaming down from Lebanon. So here's all I'm trying to say to you, is that men, you have to be willing to speak to your wives, and you have to be willing to create beauty. Now let's talk about women for just a second. Women, you have to be willing to at times not talk to your husbands, just the opposite. Their context is now. Do you know the best way? This is the best way you can set up context with your husbands. Don't worry so much about context. They do not need candles. They don't need any of that type of stuff. They're just like, they're ready to roll. And the best thing you can do as a wife is to cause your husband to feel like, in other words, let me say this. If you initiate sex, you're a woman, and you initiate sex with your husband, again, now we're talking about marriage now, because a lot of girls initiate sex that are single because they're hoping that if the guy has a lot of sex with her and she initiates it, that the guy will want to stay with her. And it's just the opposite because he's done now and he's thinking, but I wonder if that girl at the office... So that doesn't work. But wives, if you initiate sex, well, let me say it a little differently. Let me say it this way. So many single girls don't even want to have sex with their boyfriends, but they have sex with their boyfriends because they're afraid if I don't, he'll leave. I'm going to tell you something. He's leaving anyways, man. If you have to hold him with sex, he's gone. Let him go. But in marriage, if a woman initiates sex with her husband, he's not going to think you're a floozy or over-aggressive. He's going to think you're awesome. He's going to go, wow. Listen to this wife. She responds, and now here's what's happened now. He's talked to her, you're beautiful, baby. You're beautiful. You got all your teeth in your head. Man, you look like a goat to me, man. He says, wow. You know, it's like, and so he says all that stuff. He says, now, bring over those boobs over here. And then here's what she says. Listen, she says, awake north wind and come, south wind, blow on my garden. You know what that means? Just what it means. That its fragrance may spread everywhere. She's saying, we can have sex out on the patio if you want now. Let my beloved come into the garden and taste its choice fruits. Here's the point I want to get across. Women, it's like context is now. Men, the context is later. Talk first. Now, number three, serve their needs to fulfill your needs. Sex drives are strong, but marriage is strong enough to contain them and provide for a balanced and fulfilling sexual life in a world of sexual disorders. So what it's saying is there's a certain order to sex, and this world has it wrong. It's not recreation. It isn't physical first. The order's wrong. And by the way, so I lost my composure there for a second, and I'm sorry about that, but the reason I'm not in that church anymore is because we had to leave. Most of the leaders had to leave. I mean, we left so new leadership could have a fresh start. And God was gracious, and that church remained, and it grew. And even though it rocked like crazy, we all stayed long enough to stabilize it, which was hard, which was difficult. I stayed 3 years after that occurred to stabilize that place, man, because it was just like coming apart. Every day, pray, my family stay. But eventually, we were able to get it stabilized. And it kept going, and the mission kept going. There was a lot of really good people that went through that because their eyes were on Jesus, and they had got the order correct. See? Now, some of you have it out of order, and it can be re-put into order. And that's what today was about, and it's about. And what it's saying here, it's saying the marriage bed must be a place of maturity. The husband seeking to satisfy his wife and the wife seeking to satisfy her husband. Marriage is not a place to stand up for your rights. Then circle this whole sentence. Marriage is a decision to serve the other, whether in bed or out. Here's the problem with the order of our culture. Sex is all about me, my pleasure. You don't grow up as your kid in junior high talking about how you're going to bring some girl pleasure. Nobody teaches you that. That's my whole beef. That's the whole problem. That's why pornography doesn't, porn doesn't work. I have never talked to a man that's into porn and he says, I'm just practicing having a servant's heart. I'm preparing myself for marriage because I know when I get married, I'm going to serve the other person, and porn helps me do that. I've never talked to anybody who goes to the strip joints and go, you know why I go down there? Because I want to satisfy her needs. That dancer up there, I'm here to satisfy her needs. See, the problem is if you train yourself to be selfish when it comes to sex, then you get married and you find out your wife's not a porn star. And she ain't stripping on some pole for you. She's a person. Here's something to think about. Here's the key. When you learn to arouse your spouse, it causes your greatest arousal. And porn will never cause that. Now, I know some people feel like, and maybe you're checking out at this point, like, oh, well, of course, preacher boy, you're going to say that. All I'm saying to you is that if you train yourself to be selfish and then you get married, you'll be selfish once you get married with sex. And I know some people say, well, it doesn't bother me. I use porn, it doesn't bother me. And I read 50 Shades of Grey, and that doesn't bother me. And those things don't bother me. I said, well, I'm going to give you a little analogy. My grandfather was an alcoholic, and he drove drunk all the time with me in the car. And here I am. And he drove drunk all the time, and I was in the car as a little kid growing up. I was in a car. And so I guess you could go with the conclusion that, well, it didn't seem to bother him. I guess it's okay. But try to explain that to the women that founded the MAD organization that lost their kids because of a drunk driver. Should we change all the laws because one guy over here was not bothered? Does it make it all right for everybody? Because one person says, well, it didn't hurt me. It was okay for me. I wasn't affected. I'm going to ask you a question, too. Are you sure you're not? And are you sure you're not affecting someone else? Because guess what? When I was 18 years old, I thought I could drive and drink, too, and I got to get a DUI. It was my fault. I couldn't say, well, wait a second, man. My grandfather drove drunk all the time. It was fine for him. No, they just put the handcuffs on me, put me in the police car, and took me to jail. I got to call my grandmother of my drunk grandpa and say, this is a hard phone call. So all I'm saying is, you sure? Are you sure? I know people read books and they think, I'm going to ask you this question. This is the question, and we're almost done. If you see sex as a way of being entertained, then you're going to go into marriage going, entertain me. And that's one-sided. We'll just leave it at that. Now look here, the bottom line, Jesus will give you a new perspective. So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old is gone and the new has come. And I understand that a talk like today, you're in church going, gee whiz, man. Seriously, in church? And it's like, well, yeah, in church. Because we're talking about how to fail-proof your marriage, and sex is a big part of it. You know, some people don't put their own kids to bed at night because of something that happened in sex. They don't even get to put their own kids to bed at night. Somebody else does that for them because something happened with sex. Some people lost perfectly good girlfriends and boyfriends. They could have been happily married, had a great life. No, something sexual happened. Some people, I sat with a dude one time, and his wife, and she, you look at her, you go, phew, she is so pretty. They couldn't even have sex, but he was like in the bathroom all the time, hooked on masturbation. So that's why we're talking about it. You have to step up, and it'll never change for you unless your perspective changes. And some of us need it.